Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Let's go over to the Reiner case. Nick Reiner is set to be arraigned tomorrow on two counts of first-degree murder, Wednesday, that is, with special circumstances in the stabbing deaths of his parents. Legendary filmmaker Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle Singer Reiner, the 32-year-old, has been held without bail at Twin Towers Correctional Facility since his arrest December 14th, the same day his parents' bodies were discovered in the master bedroom of their Brentwood home. Defense attorney Alan Jackson, obviously known for his work with Karen Reed and Harvey Weinstein, has been signaling from day one that mental health will be a central key component to this case. He's called it a devastating tragedy with very complex and serious issues, as he cashes his check. Sources have confirmed Nick was diagnosed with schizophrenia years ago, and his medication was changed in the weeks prior to the killings. A sealed medical order has already been signed by the judge overseeing the case. All signs point to the insanity defense, but what does that actually mean in California, and how hard is it to win, and what is Alan Jackson really building here other than his bank account? To break it down, Bob Mata is with us. Bob, Alan has been using those phrases, complex, serious issues, asking for restraint and dignity since the first appearance outside the courthouse to you. What is he telegraphing, and how early does a defense attorney typically start laying groundwork for the insanity defense?
Pretty early. Yeah. You know, I mean, if you look at the situation for what it is, and I think everybody that was kind of looking at that from the outside, looking in, was like it was either the addiction or it was mental illness or a combination of both.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like, so yeah, I mean, typically if you know as the attorney, kind of the way that this thing played out, you were lining up your doctors immediately. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of putting it out there. And if you are of the mindset, because we really do as defense attorneys consider it to be the defense of last resort, because it is such a hard sell.
Yeah.
It is so hard to get a jury to utter the words not guilty by reason of insanity. It's like it's really hard for them to say those words because it feels like you're giving that person a pass. And that's just not the society we live in, mm-hmm. you know, and people that, and we talk about this a lot, T, on like a lot of these cases that you and I talk about, we talk about the aspect of people that don't have firsthand experience with somebody with mental illness mm-hmm. just tend to think that it's not a real thing.
Correct. Yeah.
That it doesn't exist in the way that it does actually exist for these folks that suffer from mental illnesses of varying varieties. And mm-hmm. It's such a tough sell. I mean, it really boils down to, do you have doctors on the stand that are going to be able to make it vivid and real for the jurors so that they understand, well, holy shit, this is something that actually exists mm-hmm. in the world. And you know, I think I told the story about the friend that we had in law school who was paranoid schizophrenic, and she was mm-hmm. under meds, and they have meds that don't cure that, but they certainly are able to tamp it down.
You know,
and I mean, they're very effective medications, and they don't have all of the symptoms that they typically would have if they don't. The problem with a lot of the medication is that when you have people that are on these meds for a long time, it makes you feel a kind of a way, you know, that's not the way that you normally feel. And it's not a way that they like feeling. So what they tend to think is, oh, I'm better.
Yeah.
Like I'm not, like this shit's not happening with me. Like I don't feel like there's somebody constantly chasing me who wants to murder me, which is vividly real for them.
Yes.
Vividly. There's no part, there is no like, oh, it's just my mental illness. like, of course there's nobody chasing me. That thought never enters their mind. Everything that a paranoid schizophrenic feels is as real as the three of us sitting on here doing this YouTube presentation today. You know, it's vividly real. There is no telling them that it's not. Like, cause I like my, you know, I had a family member that he wasn't necessarily a paranoid schizophrenia, but he had schizophrenia. He had paranoid delusions. And no matter what I said to him, you know, and I'm a very like open book, you know, like I'm not afraid to like dig into the shit with people, you know? And sure. It's like, I would sit there and I tell him, I'm like, look, man, it's like, I know that you're having a hard time believing me, because it got to the point where he didn't trust us and we were family, you know? And I was like, look, I'm just telling you that like none of what you think is happening. And I know for you that you think that it really is, it isn't. And I know that there's no way that I'm going to be able to encourage you to believe what I'm saying in a way that it's going to resonate in your mind. So like ultimately, you know, he ended up going and getting treatment, and, you know, they put him on so much lithium that this guy was like a shell of what he used to be. He was walking around like he had no affect.
Yeah.
You know, and I like he was like not a human being almost. He was just kind of like a pod walking around that could move but didn't have any kind of thoughts. He just didn't. His personality was completely gone. So you want to lay the groundwork if you know, if you're an attorney, that it's going to be an insanity or a mental defect case as early as possible, to kind of start the dialogue. Like that's the one thing I always want to happen. I want the dialogue about mental illness to start happening in this country. And we've like dug in, you and I have about this, that they, you know, like, what do we do with these folks? There's nowhere to put them. What do families do? You know, when they're dealing with a family member that's going through this shit. And I know you've written some powerful shit on this case in particular about that exact issue. You know, what was Rob Reiner supposed to do?
Yeah.
Beyond what he had already done.
Because that's the reality.
Our comment section has completely blown up. Every time we do a Reiner story, there are people in there who are talking about their experiences. This is not a one-off. This is not some weird anomaly in the community. People are dealing with this 24/7 in our communities.
Yeah. And if there's anything in this, and I said this, I think, on the first piece I did on this case, is that let's use this to learn from and to raise awareness of what millions of families are dealing with across the country. Because it's not a rich people problem. It's not a poor people problem. It's not it's an everybody problem. When there's addiction and mental illness, which strikes everybody, it doesn't matter what, this is the reality of the world that we live in. If you are the caregiver or someone who loves and cares about somebody that is afflicted with addiction and mental illness, or one or the other, or both, or vice versa, or whatever, you have a few options. You can either basically become their full-time caregiver and become your own at-home, you know, inpatient facility, which no one is equipped to do or qualified to do unless you are actually a doctor. And even then, that's not something to take home with you. Number two, you can let them go die on the streets.
Yeah.
And hope for the best that maybe they'll get their shit together and things will change, or something will happen, or they'll get locked up and get clean that way, or whatever. The third option, which used to exist, was the involuntarily permanent type hold, where we used to have mental health facilities that existed. Reagan got rid of those in the 80s. They don't exist anymore because of abuse, because people were like, that bitch is crazy. And then they go lock up their wife or their husband or their kids or whatever. And then it was horrible.
Right.
Now, to say that we couldn't go back and revisit that and say, hey, let's do this ethically. Let's do this correctly. But we don't. We're just like, that didn't work all those years ago. Yeah, there's a lot of things that didn't work years ago, but we decided to improve upon it and make it actually functional, but we don't because it costs money. So yeah. What do we do? Our mental health facilities for folks like this, it now consists of being under the overpass on I-95.
That's right. The street.
And that's basically the, and then we're like, why are all these homeless people here? Let's build more houses. No, let's get them help. Because right. You can build all the houses you want in the world. They'll trash them. They'll destroy them. They'll kill people in them. They'll kill themselves in them. They'll destroy the neighborhoods that they go into. Fix the problem. It's the mental health. It's the addiction. But we don't want to do that because that's a little bit too difficult to handle. And that's the reality. No matter how much money you have, Michelle and Nick and Rob Reiner had all the cash in the fucking world.
Money
and it didn't fix the problem.
Right.
So... that is the reality that so many families are dealing with on this. I've gotten so many letters from so many people on this and so many comments. I'm working out an interview right now with an individual, a fairly famous individual, whose story has been covered on TMZ and others, whose son was doing, she survived this, and she wants to tell her story. And that may be coming to the program here shortly to share her story with in the Hollywood circle of folks.
So
I'll tell you about it off the air.
Dialogues, dude.
Yeah.
You know
and because it's happening and there's just no recourse for people other than you risk becoming Robin Michelle Reiner, mm-hmm. you know, or your kid dying. And those are the choices.
Not only is it happening, I think it's more prevalent right now than it ever has.
Yes.
Been.
Yeah.
Okay,
like, mental illness is not getting better. Like these fucking things, dude, like all the shit that we're ingesting, in terms of poisons that they're putting in the food that we eat, in terms of us walking through, like if we were able to see the amount of invisible waves that we walk through in our brain is like,
look in our house.
It's insane.
I have a coffee machine that is hooked to Wi-Fi. Every time I make a cup of coffee, my phone alerts me that coffee's being made. No shit, Sherlock. I hit the button.
When this thing's getting hot, it's radiation. Like, that's not a secret. Like, we're fucking with our brains in ways that we were never even capable of fucking with prior to.
And the drugs that are available to people are turning people quite literally into zombies. I mean, if you want an example of it, go on Instagram. This one came up the other day. It's absolutely horrible to laugh at because it is so sad and disturbing. On a horrible level, you may look at it and go, oh my God, the irony is priceless here. Look up Tweaker Geographic on Instagram. And you will find many of videos. This is somebody that's videotaping basically zombie like tweakers in various cities. And then they narrate it like National Geographic.
I've seen it. It's fucked up.
It's horrible. It's horrible, but it's real. And that's what's so scary, because it's like Night of the Living Dead. It's The Walking Dead. And these people are everywhere. And these are people that at one time had people that loved them, that cared about them. They have families that
they probably still have people that love them.
They probably still do.
Them,
yeah.
But they can't deal with them.
Exactly. Because you can't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, dude. And those folks are probably self-medicating.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like
they have something else
going on. Right. So it's like they've gotten to that point. That's why I'm saying that there is I'm not going to throw a statistic on it because I don't know the statistics, but I would not be shocked to think that 80% of heavy drug users are also suffering from some kind of mental illness. And it's them trying to self-medicate because they haven't gone and gotten help, or they don't realize that they need help.
They're trying to quell the monster within because nothing else has fucking worked. And excuse my language, I don't normally drop the bombs here, but I know you do. But my brother was the same. There was something in his past that he never talked about. I have suspicions, but he started down the path of drug use because nothing was working. The voices in his head were too loud. Yes. Nothing was working. So he decided to take matters into his own hands. And he did. And now he's one of the walking zombies, guaranteed. Yeah. I'm waiting for the phone call anytime now that he's dead. Seriously.
It's fucking heartbreaking. Yep. You know, it really is. Yep. Hey, Stace, throw up 1140, because this, like Brian's comment, is like one of the most profound, like six word sentences that you'll ever read. And it's so true. It's where she says, we don't blame people. No, 1140 go down. We don't blame people with dementia. And
I saw that.
When you think about that, that is the perfect way to try to have people because dementia, a lot of us have somebody that is suffering from dementia, somebody that we love. And as you watch it progress, and as you watch every memory of that person slip away into the night to the point where they don't remember you, the person that you're closest to in terms of them, it becomes real. It's like, Brian, that was such a great thing to put out there because it's a way that people will start to understand that mental health issues and mental illness is real. You know, because I'm telling you, man, like this case, it is like moving mountains. When there's a homicide at the other side of this thing and you're in a court of law and you're trying to convince 12 people that this person did not have control over their mind, they could not form the requisite intent to commit this crime. And people are like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like he went to a convenience store right afterwards and bought chips. He's fucking normal. What are you talking? Mm-hmm.
No, he's not.
He hid the gun. I'm like, dude, no.
He's not. But the thing is, he made so many choices when he was sober and in a better state and he openly talked about it on the Dopey podcast and many other places where he chose the wrong path because it's what he wanted to do, what was better when he wasn't necessarily under the influence. So of course we know that this exists, you know, the mental illness exists, but I think the big question is whether we're going to allow it to be an excuse again. For it's been an excuse his whole life for all of his behavior. Oh, Nick's this, no, Nick's that. We got to bring our 32-year-old to the Christmas party because we can't trust him at home because he's an addict because of this. And now we killed them. So are we going to allow this to be another excuse again? Or are we going to finally say, you know what? Yeah, we know this exists. You yourself knew it existed, Nick, and you continue to make horrible choices. And those horrible choices put you into a situation where you lost your autonomy and you lost your control and you did horrible things. But those choices that you made led you to that place.
We're going to let this happen. I absolutely think that's exactly what's going to happen. He's just going to be another one that ends up in prison. Throw him away for life. Next.
And you know what?
One?
Good. Good. Put him up because rehab hasn't worked.
Locking him aspect out of it, though.
Maybe locking him away years ago to get him sober might have been the actual solution because the rehabs didn't work. It led him to more drugs, actually. If he had been in a facility like a prison, and I know prisons aren't necessarily rehab, you know, or correctional, even though it's in the title, it forces you to be sober in a lot of ways. Yeah, you can get drugs in prison, but your odds are a lot slimmer than on the streets. Maybe that would have been a solution here at some point in time, rather than every single time putting up more padded walls.
But what is the impact of that moving forward for the rest of the world?
Well, exactly. Is it the solution? No. But is it better than what we have right now? Might have in this case it done something? Maybe.
Is it not a solution? It's not a deterrent either.
No.
Like nobody that's fucking mentally ill is going to say, oh, well, fucking.
There's no deterrent for that.
Well, so here's my thing, man. If forget it, like the addiction thing's one part of it, okay? And the addiction and the mental illness are two separate components completely, okay? Mm-hmm. So here's where I think his culpability may lie. If he in fact was diagnosed by a competent psychotherapist or psychologist or whoever he was seeing, and they said, okay, we have diagnosed you with it. We have run it through our board. We all agree. Because that's how they do that. When you go and get and like you said, this guy had access to all the money in the world. So presumably he's going to very good doctors. Mm-hmm. And once they diagnosed him, I don't know the time frame of that. But right. To me, where the culpability lies is if, like we'll say 3 years ago, he's diagnosed with schizophrenia. And it's fucking raging. Okay, and they're like, okay, we've got meds that are going to control this disease. Okay, and if he chose to get off of his meds knowing that they helped when he was on them, then there's a question for me of culpability. Then, because it was a known thing, it was being treated, and he knowingly and voluntarily quit taking his meds because he didn't like the way they made him feel.
But that's what they do. You talked about it. So how do you work through that? Because that's exactly what they do. They think they're better. Yeah,
I know. It's a conundrum. But, in terms of, I can't get to where T is with it. It's I don't give a fuck who his parents were. I'm looking at it just as Hollywood fucking royalty has been murdered here and it's tragic. Sure. And they had all the resources in the world. I'm forgetting about all that. I'm going to strip it down to kind of the base of what the issue is here, because for us as lawyers, you're always trying to compare it to other cases and see how it's going to affect the law moving forward. And, in this particular case, they're going to be able to put on evidence that he was schizophrenic. Okay.
So without a doubt,
from that point forward, the state is going to be saying, okay, you're right. We concede that portion. Okay. He was diagnosed. He was also given medication that is known to be effective. And at some point he made the decision to get off of it. So that, and I get what you're saying, Stace, but that is going to be the legality question of it. If they are aware of it, if they voluntarily get off their meds.
I don't know how do you prove that?
Well, they quit taking it. He doesn't re-up his scripts. I mean, there'll be a paper trail. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Unless he's re-upping his scripts and he's just flushing them.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.